Mr. Soliday. May it please the Court, the issue in this case is whether Mr. Rogers' prior sex offenses qualify him as a career offender under the sentencing guidelines. The applicable sentencing guideline is 4B1.1 and 4B1.2. Mr. Rogers' two prior sex offenses...
These are difficult issues, but in light of what Judge St. Eve said...
Judge Miller?
This one's Judge Miller.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm confusing. But didn't he make clear that this was the sentence he wanted to give?
Your Honor, I don't think so, because he started with... on page 2 of his sentencing memorandum, he said, none of the calculations of the offense levels or criminal history category matter if Mr. Rogers is a career offender, so the court begins with that. So he jumped right to whether he was a career offender and didn't necessarily look at what his sentence would be if he were not a career offender.
What about the paragraph on page 8? I'm looking at the right thing. Page 8 of the sentencing memorandum, where he talks about, well, he's reciting the 3553A factors in the first paragraph. And he's saying in the upper half of the range. Isn't he indicating this is a sentence he'd like to give?
Well, Judge, I don't necessarily think so, because if he's not a career offender, then you're not jumped up to a Category 32 on the guideline.
I want to ask you this. I mean, obviously, we do have to start with a proper guidelines calculation. But why, in light of the approach to these kinds of statutory rape offenses that this court took in Shannon, can't we take note of both the age discrepancy and the incestuous nature of this conduct, and as the government argues, take into account that there is a risk of injury, of overbearing, of coercion? It's an extraordinarily unhealthy scenario, and I think, since we're only looking for a potential risk is, it seems a little redundant, but anyway, a serious potential risk of physical injury, that with those factors in the balance, you could find that it exists here.
We're
not looking at one of these, 18-year-old and 16-year-old kids.
Well, I think that Begay required that there must be similarities other than just the potential risk. They looked at the offenses listed in the statute there, and in this particular statute, the application note says forcible. It lists different similar offenses, and it says forcible sex offenses. And in this case, Mr. Rogers' two prior sex offenses were not forcible sex offenses.
It was purposeful conduct, though, on his part with both children. It was aggressive in that they couldn't have consented.
That is correct, because the law, since they're minors, they couldn't give consent. But I think that it wasn't forcible or violent conduct on his part. And I think that if Congress or the Sentencing Commission wanted to include all sex offenses, they would not have just said in the application note under 4B1.2, it says forcible sex offenses. They would have just said sex offenses.
One of these offenses involved a 13-year-old, according to what you've appended. The count one, a child of 13.
That is correct, but he was never charged or convicted of rape, which would be a forcible sex offense.
Well, but in Shannon, that's getting awfully close to Shannon. Right.
Would you agree that information that the girl in count two was his daughter was properly before the judge?
Oh, yes, it was. He was presented with both information, charging documents, and the probable cause affidavits. I think he limited his inquiry just to the information, not the probable cause, but yes, it was his
but
daughter.
It indicated in the pre-sentence report as well that the victim of count two was his daughter.
That is correct. It was his daughter. Does the court have any other questions? I think I'm out of time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Soliday. Mr. Schmidt?
The courts are virtually unanimous that where there are aggravating factor or an aggravating factor.
I understand the relevance of incest. If we're talking about crimes of violence, is right? Why would incest increase the risk of violence?
The cases that have addressed this issue have all said that.
I want your answer.
Because it's it further unbalances the relationship between the offender and the victim.
But I have
and when you
question.
Further unbalance, I'm sorry, Your Honor, when you further unbalance.
It doesn't seem related to violence. In fact, you could argue the opposite. You could say if the father of the girl wants to have sex with her, he's not going to have to use force because he is the authority of the parent.
I think the theory, Your Honor, is that where someone has a position of authority, including that of a parent, over a victim.
No, I understand. Of course, that makes it effect, but it's a substitute for violence. So then, where's the element of violence? It's it's an ugly crime, but why is it violent? Unless you think sex is always violent.
Because a parent has the right to use some level of force with a child to exact compliance, including with spanking.
Well, obviously, doesn't have a right to use force to compel sex. I mean,
but I want to get back to the first of all, I really want you to address Begay and the language of the guideline is that we need conduct that presents a serious potential risk of physical injury to another. And unless the government has adopted the position of Andrea Dworkin, sex, no matter who, whether there's a familial relationship or not, as long as both parties are physically mature, isn't something we usually think of as a physically violent act. Now, there are people who argue it is, but we don't usually follow that.
Here, the risk of potential injury is at least twofold, because one of the prior sex offenses involved vaginal penetration with the...
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, if it had been she's 15, if it had been her 17-year-old boyfriend, which unfortunately happens with all too much frequency, we wouldn't be saying that the fact that it was vaginal intercourse meant that it was violent, would we? We might condemn it for many other reasons, but not because it was violent.
Here we have a substantial age discrepancy of a 34-year-old man and two 15-year-old
victims. That's another reason, like the incest, for thinking that force would not be necessary to effectuate consent.
I think the cases have said, Your Honor, that where there's a substantial age difference, the threat of the use of force.
No, that's not the point. That's not the point. The reason the age disparities are, I believe, are aggravating factors, the notion that an older person has a kind of sophistication that he can use for seduction in a way that another teenager couldn't.
Another reason, the substantial age difference.
Again, what does it have to do with violence? I'm pursuing Judge Wood's question. Is this venereal disease? Is it bad pregnancy and the child is not properly taken care of? Is that what's involved?
Here we have.
Of course, that would turn every teenage sex case into a crime of violence.
Here we have the risk of pregnancy. We have the risk.
You have that in every case, right?
Not in every sexual misconduct case. Here we have specific vaginal intercourse. And here we also have the risk of sexually transmitted disease, which is a greater risk the older the offender is.
So is it your view that any unprotected sex, full sex, with a minor is a crime of violence?
The standard is...
Answer my question. Is that your position?
Yes, Your Honor, because the standard is a very liberal one.
So you think we really didn't go far enough in Shannon?
I accept Shannon completely, but here this case fits well within the parameters of Shannon, Thomas, and the other Seventh Circuit decisions.
So why aren't you arguing that the Sentencing Commission should just change 4B1.2A2 to say serious potential risk of physical or psychological injury to another? Because if it said that, this is a snap. I mean, this seems to me there's a very big risk of psychological injury.
Judge Ripple has urged the Sentencing Commission to do precisely that in another case, and that may be a wise thing, but that's not the situation we're faced with yet. Here, this case fits well within the existing parameters, which is the risk of pregnancy, not just the risk of any pregnancy, which is itself, as the Shannon Court said, a grave form of bodily injury in and of itself. But we have the risk of high-risk pregnancy, which presents not only dangers to the mother, but also dangers to a baby that may come from
it. Is that because of the incest?
No, Your Honor. That's just from the pregnancy to a
person
that's 15.
I could see the argument of the incest, of course. That is at least a slight increased risk of fetal defects with an incestuous parentage. But you really are arguing, which I don't think we've ever gone this far, to say that every time there's sex, at least if it's unprotected.
What I'm really arguing in this case, and I want to answer...
Then that's a crime of violence. That's your position, right?
No, here we have...
It was your position 2 minutes ago. Now you've changed it. So now what's going on?
But here the case is easier, Your Honor. We have aggravating factors of a substantial age difference.
That has nothing to do with violence.
I think it does. In that an older person is able to exact and wield authority with the threat of violence.
Authority is different from violence. Look, there are two types of violence. You can have a violent rape, which we don't have, or you could have violence, physical injury of some sort, resulting from the sex itself. That's what I thought you were focusing on, and that there's always risks at risk of pregnancy if it's unprotected. Even if it is, there's still a risk. But as long as there's a risk of pregnancy, I thought your view is risk of pregnancy, then it's a crime of violence.
Here
is that your position or not?
No, we have risk of pregnancy, risk of high-risk pregnancy, and risk of high risk.
What's the high risk of pregnancy?
A person who's of younger age, this court has held...
Oh, please, that has nothing to do with the risk. What does that have to do with the risk of pregnancy?
Your Honor, you said that in Shannon.
Look, you say your position is these kids, they're irresponsible... And, you know, so the risk of pregnancy may be greater because they don't have access to abortion or they don't have contraception or what. Okay.
Or if there's a pregnancy, it's a higher risk.
Oh, no, I understand. But I thought your point is any sex with a minor that carries with it a risk of pregnancy because it's, you know, regular intercourse and no contraception, that is a crime of violence. Is that the Justice Department's position? Yes or no?
Where yes the person's no. less than 16?
Yes or no?
I don't know that I followed your entire question,
right,
Your Honor.
It's a very simple question. If there is sex with a minor that involves a risk of pregnancy, is that a crime of violence per se?
Not necessarily, no. There would be if there were aggravating factors present. And here we have at least two aggravating factors present, both the fact that one of the prior crimes involved incest, as conceded by defense counsel, one of the 15-year-old victims was his own daughter. And here we have a very substantial age difference, which both increases the risks of sexually transmitted disease and creates the risk of force being brought to bear because of the risk of non-compliance brings consequences of force. In addition, I want to answer Judge Wood's question about Big A, because I think that can be forthrightly addressed. Big A potentially causes us to say, is this particular prior offense one that is similar to the other ones that are listed in the example clause of either the Armed Career Criminal Act or Section 4B1.2, if Big A applies that far? And here, we would argue that it is similar. For example, in United States versus Pierce, the Fourth Circuit said that the danger from the risk of physical injury to a child in these sex abuse cases is a danger that is quite similar in character to the potential injury to persons involved in arson or burglary. I would also argue it's similar to extortion.
Arson and burglary?
That's what the Fourth Circuit said
What's
in United
that
States
about?
Versus Pierce.
I don't understand that at all.
I would also argue it's...
There have been more dissimilar crimes than arson and statutory rape.
I think what the court there was getting at, Your Honor, was the fact that...
Incest.
In arson, no one's purpose...
I mean, this is a kind of a parody of legal reasoning. When you try to analogize arson to statutory rape.
I also think it's close to extortion. Extortion, really the essence of extortion...
But extortion, it's not... I don't understand.
Extortion, really the essence of it is a person... I'm sorry, Your Honor?
This is the Hobbs Act we're talking about?
I'm saying that this particular crime can be analogized to extortion because extortion is really...
Apologies.
I'm sorry. Extortion is really the essence of a person taking advantage of his or her position to take something that does not belong to him. And here, sexual misconduct with a minor is really similarly, essentially about taking advantage of a child or an adolescent and taking something, sex or sexual gratification.
Isn't that the aggressiveness that Begay was talking about?
Yes, two things, both purposeful.
You've got a predatory relationship here.
And aggressive in that it's predatory. And those are the categories that the court mentioned in Begay in the majority opinion of the kinds of things that you have to fit into in the examples clause in order to be able to take advantage
There's
of the otherwise.
It's purposeful conduct.
It's purposeful and it's aggressive in this particular case. It may not necessarily be violent, but the Supreme Court didn't say it had to hit every feature of the examples clause, just fit generally within those examples. And here we have purposeful conduct where there's clear criminal intent.
Well, of course it's purposeful. I mean, what are you talking about? It wouldn't be a crime if it weren't purposeful, would it? Well, I guess...
Well, drunk driving was something that was very much afield from the examples clause, and I think that's why we ended up with the decision in Begay.
Drunk driving is much greater probably than the risk of any physical harm from this sex.
But that's precisely what Begay said. Just because we have a significant risk of injury, if it isn't similar enough to the examples listed in the examples clause, then we're not there. Here, this is like extortion, a person taking advantage in a predatory way of another person, and we have purposeful and aggressive conduct. Here, again, we have not just one aggravating factor, which courts across the country in every circuit have said is enough to make this a crime of violence for the career offender statute. But here we have two aggravating factors, both incest and the huge age difference here. We'd ask you to affirm the district court's finding that Mr. Rogers was a career offender for his cocaine convictions and these two prior sex offenses against
Okay, minors. Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Mr. Soliday, you want another minute? Do you have anything further?
The one point I would like to stress is that in the application note to 4B1.2, it says forcible sex offenses. It doesn't just say sex offenses. And that's specific enough where I think it is the distinguishing factor in this case, that this was not a forcible sex
offense. Does it say forcible?
It's the 4B1.2, the application note, which is the... it's the second full paragraph under that. It says, and it lists similar, or it lists examples of crimes that would count. And it says forcible. And since it doesn't say in general sex offenses, and in Begay, the court talks about some of the history of Congress and when they listed the crimes in the 924 statute, that it talks about if they wanted actual offenses listed, they would have listed those or made it more general. So I think that's important in this case. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Soliday. And you were appointed, were you not? We thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client. We thank Mr. Schmidt as well.